Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, and coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today, I welcome the best-selling author of The Disappearance of the Universe, Straight Talk About Illusions, Past Lives, Religion, Sex, Politics, and the Miracles of Forgiveness. Awesome. Gary R. Renard has been a successful professional guitar player and had a powerful shift in consciousness in the late 80s and early 90s that led to a powerful spiritual awakening, which in turn led to the writing of the book, The Disappearance of the Universe. It took him 9 years to put it together, but what a fascinating read it is. And now Gary spends his time traveling and speaking and continuing to write. And he's also a private investor. So it's a joy to welcome Gary Renard to today's show. Welcome, Gary.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's great to be on the show. And I'm really excited to be coming to Fort Worth this weekend. That's going to be great.
That's right.
I've never been there. I have been to Dallas. But even that was a long time ago. Most of the times that I've spoken in Texas, and it's probably been about a dozen times, but it's mostly been in Austin, San Antonio, places like that, and I'm really looking forward to coming to Fort Worth, and we can do a great workshop on Saturday, and I'll speak at the church service on Sunday, so it should be a great weekend.
All right, yeah, we're glad you're going to be with us, and if anyone's interested in coming to that workshop, I think it's 10 to 5 on Saturday. It's at our Unity Event Center. And if you want to call in at 817-423-2965, you can talk to the coordinators there, and they can help get you a ticket, or you can email and contact the church at unityfortworth.org. So different ways to contact. Of course, you can also contact Gary directly, and his staff will be able to help you as well. So, Gary, you know, breakthroughs often come to those who are in extremis. You know, you look at various spiritual teachers and masters. Many of them had a traumatic experience. Maybe it was an illness, and they almost died, and then they came forth totally new, awake, if you like. Sometimes it's addiction. Sometimes it's hitting the wall, you know, that we can't go on anymore. You had a similar kind of thing, didn't you? A sort of a shift in your life, like we said in your late 1980s, early 90s. You want to talk about that? How that happened for you?
Yes. Part of the way it came about was in the late 80s. I had been a guitar player for about 20 years, and I did well at it, especially the last 10 years that I did it, but there was something missing, and you'll hear that a lot from people who are on a spiritual path. They feel like something is missing, that's because there is something missing, which I'll get to. But I felt like, you know, it wasn't working for me anymore to be a musician. I wanted to get someplace quiet. So I moved up to Maine, which is a very quiet and peaceful place. But I couldn't make anything work. You know, I couldn't, seem to make money. I couldn't seem to get anything to go right. It was cold. It was very rural. And actually, I didn't like it the first couple of years that I was there. And I was just about ready to move back to the Boston area and start being a guitar player again. And I remember I picked up my guitar, took it out of the closet, and I started to practice. Both my hands were occupied, and all of a sudden I felt another hand. It was like this hand was, which I couldn't see, was pushing down on the neck of the guitar and kept pushing the guitar down to the floor and me along with it. And it was a very mystical experience, but very real. And I'm the kind of a guy who looks for signs. And that was definitely a sign. And I got the message. And the message was, no, you're not supposed to do that anymore. It's like, you know, you've been there. You've done that. There's something else for you to do. Now, I kind of hoped that what I would do would be somehow connected to this relationship that I felt with Jesus. Because ever since I was a little kid, 7 years old, 8 years old, for some reason, I would talk to Jesus in my mind. It wasn't a religious thing. You know, I've never really been religious. I like to say, in the winter, I'm a Buddhist. In the summer, I'm a nudist. And it's like, I've never really been very religious, but I always had an affinity for Jesus. And I felt like I could talk to him in my mind, like he was my friend, and that he would help me. And I always felt that way, even though I never could get into the dogma of a religion. I always thought that there was something there with Jesus, that there was more to Jesus than what I was being told by the churches that I occasionally went to, even though I didn't go that much. And eventually I did read the Bible, because when I was younger, before all this started, I was very depressed when I was a teenager, and in my early to mid-20s, and I tried to be a born-again Christian, and because of that, I read the Bible, and that actually came in handy for me later, because when I had these conversations, which people will see in the book, The Disappearance of the Universe, with these two spiritual beings who appeared to me and taught me about many things, especially A Course in Miracles, which is a good deal of the subject matter of what they talked about, I was able to carry on conversations with them better because I had read the Bible. So that definitely came in handy. And, you know, what happened in Maine a couple of months after that episode with the guitar was that these two spiritual beings appeared to me and start to talk to me and to teach me. Now, I think that a major reason why that happened was because I made a decision. You know, a lot of times, if you make a decision, it's very important, and things start to change, and things start to go in the direction of the decision that you have made. And the decision that I made shortly before my teachers appeared to me was, and you can see this in the book, I said, you know, I want to remove conflict from my life. You know, I'm just tired of conflict. I was tired of all these disagreeable people. And, you know, I was in a situation where someone was suing me, and I was suing them. And I was looking for peace. You know, and I said, look, I want to remove conflict from my life. Now, that's a pretty heavy-duty decision, because you know, the world is riddled with conflict. This is a world of duality, where you have good and bad, the yin and the yang, always, you know, going out of balance, and it tries to come back into balance, but it can't stay in balance, so it's always going, you know, in and out of balance. There's always conflict. You've got all these opposites. You know, that's why everywhere you look, you see opposites. You know, so there's a perpetual conflict. So you have Democrats and Republicans. You know, you have people arguing with each other all the time. Nobody can quite seem to agree on things. And I was just tired of all that. And when I decided that I wanted to remove conflict from my life, there were two things. First of all, I had no idea what a tall order that was. You know, that's not as easy as I thought it would be. And the other thing was that as a result of that decision, a series of events unfolded where I was shown a way to remove conflict from my life. And even though it was harder than I thought it would be, because it turned out, you know, I wanted a short-term fix, and it turned out to be a lifelong spiritual path. And I wasn't really looking for that at the time. I just figured, you know, I'll get enlightened some weekend, and then I can go make money or something. And I wasn't really, you know, looking for a discipline. But I should have known better, because I learned before that, in the 80s, I remember when I was really depressed, all around up until I was, say, 26, 27, I didn't have any mental discipline. And then I did this thing called the EST training. And what the EST training did for me was it gave me my first thought system. And I can't possibly overemphasize how important it is to have a thought system, which most people don't. A Course in Miracles, which I'll be talking about this weekend, says that an untrained mind can accomplish nothing. That's a pretty provocative statement, because it's saying right off the bat that most of the people who are into spirituality are accomplishing nothing because their mind is not being trained. If you don't train the mind, it will run like a wild animal. It'll just run off on its own, like a wild animal. You have to train it. And if you do, then you can begin to harness the power of the mind. And the mind is incredibly powerful. And belief, you know, the idea of belief and believing in something is way more powerful than people realize at first. And you have to learn how to control it. You have to learn how to get a hold of that power of the mind and use it for your benefit. Because if you don't, there's this other thing that will use it. And we'll call that the ego. And you could simply think of the ego as being the false you, a false identity, which is based on separation. And because of that, you probably think that there are, you know, two different identities for you to choose between. You have the real you, and you have the false you. The false you, the ego, is based on the idea of separation. And everywhere that it looks, it sees separation. It believes that it has separated itself from God and also from everything else, because it's all based on separation. So everything that we see is separate. It has a beginning and an ending. It has a border or a limit. It has a shape or a form. And we see separation everywhere. But that is not reality. That is something that is based the ego. The Buddhists would call it impermanence. The Hindus would call it the world of multiplicity. It's something that is illusion. And A Course in Miracles takes that idea of the world being an illusion, which of course is a very old idea, but it takes that teaching and I think does a very nice job of refining it into the idea that this is a dream that you will awaken from. And it's that awakening from the dream that is enlightenment. So what that leads to, if you undo the ego, the way A Course in Miracles puts it, it says salvation is undoing. What you do is you undo the false you. You undo the ego. Now, that's a brilliant approach, because if you could do that, if you could actually complete the job and undo the false you, then eventually the real you would be all that's left. And you don't have to do anything about the real you. The real you is already perfect. You know, the real you is already exactly the same as its source. It's already exactly the same as God, which is perfection. And I'm not talking about the, you know, the anthropological version of God that we've been given by religion. I'm talking about a God that, as both the Bible and A Course in Miracles would agree, is perfect love. But I think that we have to understand the implications of that. If God is really perfect love, then all that it would know how to do would be to love. You know, if it knew how to do something else, it wouldn't be perfect love. You know, it would be something else. So perfect love is just that, perfect love and nothing else. And this is what the truth is. This is what the real you is. And the truth is something that is unalterable. You know, it's something that is a constant. So you've got reality, which is a constant, something that does not shift or change. You know, the way that the Course puts it, it says, whatever is true is eternal and cannot change or be changed. Well, that narrows it down quite a bit, because there's nothing in this world that doesn't shift or change. It's in a constant state of shift and change, and that's illusion. And then you have reality, which does not shift or change, which is why reality is something that you can depend upon. It's stable, where the illusion of the world is unstable in its functioning and is something that you simply can't depend on, because the only thing that you can depend on here is that it's not going to be the same 1 minute from now or 5 minutes from now. It's always going to be changing, and that's not dependable. But reality, the reality of God, which is love, is dependable. And all that you need to do, and I say all you need to do, well, it's a pretty big job, but you need to undo the false you, and eventually the real you will be all that's left. And what happens as you do that, as you go through that process, is that your experience of life will start to change. I mentioned that the world is a dream. Well, as you go along undoing the ego, and we'll get to exactly how to do that, but as you go along doing that, you know, maybe your body will start to feel lighter. Maybe it will start to feel more like the figure in a dream that it really is, instead of this thing that you have to carry around all day. Maybe it will become more flexible, more elastic. Maybe it will be more difficult to hurt it. Maybe you'll get into an accident, a little accident, and you hurt yourself, and it doesn't hurt. And you'll say, well, that's strange. You know, that should hurt, but it doesn't. And you'll get into situations that you used to get into that used to make you nervous, or maybe, you know, used to cause apprehension. Maybe somebody walks into the room who you hate, or you, at least you used to, and that person walks into the room, and all of a sudden they have no effect on you. You know, they don't bother you. And what brings that experience about is a certain kind of forgiveness that the Course teaches, which I believe Jesus taught 2,000 years ago. And you can see it today in A Course in Miracles, because Jesus is the voice of A Course in Miracles. And my book, and all three of my books, because it's a trilogy now, The Disappearance of the Universe, is teaching a certain kind of forgiveness. And the teachers in my books were disciples who were there with Jesus 2,000 years ago, and they relayed personal experiences with him and their personal experiences and how to do this kind of forgiveness. And it's really interesting, because there's no way that I could have written my books, because I wouldn't have known anything about it. I'd never heard of A Course in Miracles until my teachers appeared to me, and they told me after the second visit I was going to start, you know, studying this thing called A Course in Miracles. And my attitude was, hey, you know, nobody's going to tell me what to do. And there I was 3 days later buying my first copy of A Course in Miracles. And I picked it up and I started to read it, and it was like, you know, what the hell is this? I mean, it made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. It might as well have been written in a foreign language. And the only thing that I could see that I recognized was that whoever was talking in this book, the voice of the Course, was speaking in the first person. And he was clearly saying that he was Jesus. And when I saw that, I thought, well, you know, this better be good. And, but it turned out it was good, but I didn't know that at first. Because one of the problems with A Course in Miracles, and it's, you know, just a metaphysical masterpiece, but one of the problems that people have with it is that it is not a linear presentation. It's a holographic presentation. It starts right off with its most advanced ideas, like the first miracle principle, It says there is no order of difficulty in miracles. One is not harder or bigger than another. They're all the same. Well, I don't know how anybody could pick that up, read that, and have any idea what that means.
Right.
And what happens, hopefully, with the Course is that through repetition and going through it, a lot of the ideas are introduced and they go away, then they come back again. Those are the major themes of the Course. And hopefully through repetition, you start to get it. But that doesn't happen with a lot of people, and the Course ends up sitting on their bookcase for 10 years because, you know, they can't understand it. It's hard to get excited about something that you don't understand. And what my teachers did in the Disappearance of the Universe was they gave me a linear presentation of the Course. They spelled it out for me. You know, like I was, a beginner, which I was, and they spelled it out to me, even though I had been on a spiritual path for 15 years before that. I needed that 15 years just to be ready to talk to them.
Right,
and
yeah.
Then what they did was they, you know, started to explain this to me in a linear fashion, and then after, I'd say 7 or 8 visits from them, there were a total of 19, that first series of visits, and it took place over 9 years. So the book's, you know, a little long. It's over 400 pages, but I'm told that it's a very fun read, that it goes by a lot faster than people expect it to.
Absolutely. And, we need to go to the break, but we'll talk more about the book with Gary Renard. We're talking about The Disappearance of the Universe, which explicates the Course in Miracles, like Gary said, in a linear way that makes it easier to digest for us. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the nature of illusion. Join us in a couple minutes after these messages from Unity.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
Do you ask with childlike wonder, what is the nature of God? Who is Jesus? What is the Christ? How do we know what we know? When you ask these or other heart-centered questions about the non-physical, intangible aspects of life, you are, on some level, a student of metaphysics. New from Unity House and nearly 5 years in the making, Heart-Centered Metaphysics, A Deeper Look at Unity Teachings, is now available. This is Paul Hasselbeck, author of this quintessential study guide. Enjoy a deeper exploration of universal spiritual principles and truths, whether you are just starting or have been seeking for years. Each thought-provoking chapter of Heart-Centered Metaphysics speaks to truth seekers like you, providing essential tools to help elevate your consciousness and create spiritual transformations in your outer life and circumstances. Order your copy today from the Unity Online Store at www.unity.org. Then click on Shop.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants 5 Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've
have been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Gary Renard. We're talking about his book, The Disappearance of the Universe. And I want to talk a little bit about illusion and the nature of that, because in the Buddhist tradition, they talk about chop wood and carry water. And that's what you do, you know, when you're in the dualistic universe that you talked about. But then after enlightenment, you know, you chop wood and you carry water. So it's a sense that it's not that we have to get rid of anything. It's just we see it in a different way, right? We spend so much of our time in this illusory state of constructs that we've created that our ego puts there for us, and the world of seeming separation. But the truth is, right, that this universe is what it is. It's a heavenly place, and once we penetrate beyond those illusions, we don't see that there's another universe. We see the universe as it is, if you like. So is that something you can buy into there, this idea that it's inherently good, that God only creates the good, and so even what we ascribe to being illusory is actually the truth, just we're mistaking it for something else.
That's a great question. Let me finish just a couple of really quick points. I mentioned that after 7 or 8 visits, and I didn't finish what I was saying, I noticed after 7 or 8 visits from my teachers, I could go back and read A Course in Miracles, and it was actually starting to make sense to me. So that's one thing. The next thing is that what it was talking about was a certain kind of forgiveness that undoes the ego. Now, that leads into your next question about the nature of the illusion. And A Course in Miracles is a little different than most things. It's not the same, really, as anything else that I've seen. That's because it's a purely non-dualistic thought system. It's saying, yes, there may appear to be the world of God and the world of man, but of the two, only the world of God is true and nothing else is true. So this is where A Course in Miracles is kind of like parts company with just about anything else, because it's saying that God did not create this world, that God actually has nothing to do with it, and that God is still perfect love, and heaven has never been altered, and in fact, we're still there too, but we're having this dream, and this is a dream that will be undone, and we will awaken from it. And the best analogy that I can use would be, you know, let's say that you have a 3-year-old son or daughter, and they're in bed and they're dreaming, and you peek in on them and you see that they're obviously having a dream because they're tossing and they're turning and maybe they're not having a very good experience all the time. Well, you can't see their dream. And the reason that you can't see their dream is because it's not real. It's a figment of their imagination. It's something that's in the mind that you can't see because it's not real. But when they awaken from that dream, when they wake up, first of all, the dream disappears, which is why my first book was called The Disappearance of the Universe. And what they awaken to is a greater reality, and they're surprised to find out that they never left the bed. Yes, it looked like they were in their dream. You know, when you're in bed at night and you're in a dream, for all intents and purposes, that dream is your reality. You respond to it, you react to it as though it's real. That's what we're doing with this dream here that we're experiencing that we think is reality. But then the time will come when we will awaken from this dream. And just like the 3-year-old is surprised that the dream wasn't real when they awaken to this place and all of a sudden they're in the bed and the dream is gone, what we will awaken to is a place that we never really left except in dreams. And that place is what both A Course in Miracles and religion would call heaven. And the difference with A Course in Miracles is that this heaven is perfect oneness. It has no concept of separation. It has no dream of division or opposites or polarity or duality or anything like that. It is a state of perfect oneness. So the way that Course in Miracles defines it, it says that heaven is the awareness of perfect oneness and the knowledge that there is nothing else, nothing else outside this oneness, nothing else within. The Course teaches there is no life outside of heaven. It would teach that what we're experiencing here in the world isn't even real life, that it's a parody of life. It's a dream of separation that is almost the opposite of reality, that is almost the opposite of perfect oneness with God, which is reality. And it's saying, and this is the good part, it's saying that it's possible for you to experience that even while you appear to be here, even while you appear to be in the dream. And this kind of like goes along with, you know, the Buddhist, you know, chop wood, carry water. Well, you do that before enlightenment. You do the same thing after enlightenment because, as the Course puts it, enlightenment is but a recognition. It's not a change at all. So,
right.
Course in Miracles is not about changing anything. It will change, you know, naturally. If you change the cause, which is what's in the mind, then the effect will take care of itself. That's the approach of A Course in Miracles, which makes it different than the self-help movement, because the self-help movement is about, you know, kind of like getting stuff and attracting things to you and making things happen in the world, which, you know, I understand everybody wants that. And I'm not a hypocrite. I've used the self-help movement in my life successfully. So I'm certainly not going to put it down. I'm just saying that I know the difference between the self-help movement and real spirituality, because the self-help movement is based on a false premise. The false premise is that if you get what you want, it will make you happy. And that is a false premise. It might make you happy for 2 days, and then you're going to want something else. And A Course in Miracles, on the other hand, will say, well, wait a minute, you can be happy and peaceful and strong regardless of what happens in your life. If you want to be coming from a real position of strength, then you want to be able to have that strength no matter what appears to happen. And that's real spirituality, because real spirituality is not dependent on circumstances. It's not dependent on what happens in your life. It's a way of being strong and building your house upon the rock regardless of what appears to happen. And that's a different story. So that's the approach of A Course in Miracles, and that if you bring peace to the mind, then peace will begin to show up on the screen that you are projecting. You know, you might ask, well, hey, if God did make this world, then where did it come from? Well, where it's coming from is kind of like a movie theater. You know, you go into the movies, and the lights go down, and your attention is diverted to the screen. Now, what's on the screen isn't real. It's an illusion. You know, it's a trick. It's a sleight of hand. But your attention is diverted to the screen, and after a while, you may even start to forget that it's not real. You might become involved in the story. You may become emotional. You might even talk to the screen. You might even say, no, no, don't go there. You know, and your attention is, you know, beginning to get to the point where your disbelief is going away, and you're actually starting to believe in what's on the screen, which is exactly what we've done with this world. We are believing what's on the screen. And we don't understand that, just like in a movie theater, if we want to change what's on that screen, then we have to remember something. It's not going to do us too much good to fool around with the screen. At best, it'll give you some kind of a temporary solution. But if you want to have a permanent impact on what's on that screen, then you got to remember something. There's this projector, and the projector is hidden. You're not supposed to think about it. But if you really wanted to change what's on that screen in a movie theater, you would have to find that projector, and you would have to change what's in the projector. If you did that, now you would be dealing with the cause instead of the effect, which is why A Course in Miracles says this is a course in cause and not effect. It says, seek not to change the world, seek rather to change your mind about the world. If you do that, now you're dealing with the cause instead of the effect. And in the projection that we're looking at, that we call the universe of time and space, what it is a projection that is coming from a projector that is hidden, just like in a movie theater, and the place that it's hidden is in the unconscious mind. And that's where this projection is coming from. You know, the American Indians, they used to say, "Behold the great mystery." Well, A Course in Miracles says, "Behold the great projection," because that's all that it is. And the projection is coming from us, and most people think that it's being done to them, that it's something that is outside of them, that's kind of like, you know, coming at them, which puts you in a reactive, defensive mode. But if there's something that great masters like Jesus and Buddha understood, they understood that the world was not being done to them. They understood that the world was being done by them, that it was coming from them, that they were the cause, that they were the dreamer of the dream. They were not the dream anymore, and they were not a figure in the dream anymore. They were the originator of the dream. It was coming from them, and it's only from that position that you can choose to wake up. You can't wake up from a dream that the world is dreaming for you. You can't wake up from a dream that is being dreamed by somebody else. But you can wake up from a dream when you're the dreamer, when you're the one who's doing it. You can choose to awaken from it. And what the kind of forgiveness that I mentioned that is taught in the Course does is it kind of like gives you a whole new way of looking at everything and forgiving it. But this is not the kind of forgiveness that the world thinks about, if it thinks about forgiveness at all. And this kind of forgiveness is coming from a place of cause, which means that you're doing it, which means now you're going to forgive people, and you're going to forgive the world and the situations and the events that you see. You're going to forgive people not because they've really done something. If you forgive people from a place where you're making it real, and they really did it, then you're going to continue to believe in it, and you're going to keep it stuck in your mind. But if you forgive people not because they've actually done something, but because they haven't really done anything, because you're the one who made them up in the first place, now you're not a victim. And, you know, this world was made by God. You would be a victim of God. You would be a victim of a force that is outside of you that did it to you. But what if God is just, you know, still home having a good time, and all that God wants us to do is wake up and be with God so that God can love us? Well, you know, that's a different story, because now it answers a question that I've heard so many people ask in my life, and that is, you know, how could God allow such terrible things to happen in the world? How could God allow all these awful things happen to these nice people who don't even deserve it, and all this misery and cruelty and starving and violence? How could God allow that? Well, the simple answer is that God had nothing to do with it. God is still perfect love, and we made a mistake. We were not kicked out of paradise like the Adam and Eve myth. We made a decision to leave, and it turned out to be kind of a bonehead move. Because in this world, you don't just have abundance, you have scarcity. You don't just have health, you have sickness. You know, you don't just have life, you have death. You have this whole world of opposites that is not possible to have in a world of perfect oneness where there are no opposites. So what we want to do, first in our experience and then in our reality, is awaken to a world where there's no such thing as opposites, where there is only good and only life and only abundance. And that has to be a place of perfect oneness, because in perfect oneness you have everything. But as soon as you have a split from that perfect oneness, then you have scarcity, because you no longer have it all. And through the device of separation, that illusion keeps dividing and subdividing over and over and over again. And every time it subdivides, what is left is smaller. You know, so it just becomes an endless cycle until you start to undo it and return back to oneness. So what we do through forgiveness, you know, a certain kind of forgiveness, is that we kind of like are putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. You know, and we're returning in our experience to a state of perfect oneness. And as you do that, as you go along, you may have the great mystical experience that the masters of history have talked about, you will actually experience. And, you know, this might last at first for like 1 second, but you may have an experience of your perfect oneness with God. And once you have that experience, then you know that that must be reality, because it is so much more real than this is. You know, everything here is just kind of like, you know, fleeting and temporary and transitory. But the experience of your perfect oneness with God is something that is the opposite. It's something that is full. You know, it's whole. It's satisfying. It's not,
you know,
temporary.
You know, I want to ask a question, because there's a Buddhist teaching that you can guarantee something is whole and complete and full and the essence of oneness, which you're talking about, by the fact that it is fleeting, that it continually renews itself. If it never renewed itself, it would be static and dead. So there's that idea that things can seem to be fleeting, they seem to be in constant flux and movement, which is the holographic universe itself, but inherently it is changeless. So my question is, can it be both and? Because what I'm hearing is almost a dualistic way of thinking, you know, that we've got to jettison something in order to find something else. Whereas I would espouse the idea that everything is part of the whole, regardless of the misperceptions we have about it. In other words, everything can be useful, right? It's all grist for the mill. And so, you know, it may be illusory, but it has a purpose. It has a helpfulness to help us get back to this true reality, this true oneness. So I'm concerned that there's sort of a saying that, you know, all these things, this universe is not real, you know, not helpful. It's an annoyance. If we could just get beyond it, we could get back to something. It's smacks of old-timey religion in a way. You know, this idea that, well, you know, earth and flesh, it's sinful, but eventually I'll get to heaven and all will be well. Whereas my viewpoint is that, you know, the gods or the essence of the real interpenetrates everything. And once we understand that, then everything becomes filled with light and wonder and joy and all the things you're talking about. So maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying, but I don't think there's a need to jettison as much as re-understand, reawaken to what is the truth of our being.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word jettison. I would more use the word release it.
Okay.
But the thing is, you know, now that you appear to be stuck here, you kind of like have to find a way to use the universe to return to reality, because your experience is that you're here.
Right.
I'm not here to deny anybody's experience. You know, our experience is that we are a body and that we have real problems and real bills to pay. And that's why I think, you know, you have to understand that A Course in Miracles is done at the level of the mind. And when it comes to the level of the world and your life, what you do is you live your life, you know, be normal. Don't forget how to be normal. A lot of spiritual people do forget how to be normal. And the difference with A Course in Miracles is that it's saying that there is a certain kind of forgiveness where you don't make it real and where you don't believe in it that allows you to save a great deal of time in undoing the ego. So the Course says the chief aim of the miracle worker is to save time. Why is that? Because you're undoing the ego. That is the approach of A Course in Miracles. And it's not judging the world as being good or bad, as being beautiful or ugly. It's saying that there is a reality that is like just beyond the veil, you know, just beyond the veil of illusion, and that reality is God. Now, as I, you know, said a little bit earlier, A Course in Miracles is not the same as anything else, and it's not saying the same thing as anything else. And I certainly don't have anything against anything else, because A Course in Miracles does not claim to be the only way to get home to God. It says it's just one of many paths. If it's for you, then you know it, and if it's not, you know, it could be anything. It could be Buddhism, Hinduism, anything that, you know, resonates for people. But if A Course in Miracles is for you, then it is relentlessly uncompromising. And part of that uncompromising nature is that it's not dualistic, because it's saying that only the world of God is true, and then nothing else is true. So the part that we think is separate from God has absolutely no reality whatsoever. So nothing in this universe of shift and change has any reality. And the best thing that you can do with a dream is awaken from it. And even then, you don't have to. You know, nobody has to wake up and go home to God if they don't feel like it. You know, that's a personal decision. I think it's you know, something that everyone will decide eventually, but it certainly doesn't have to be now. I just think that there are some people, including me, who have decided, look, all that this world does is shift and change. So being human is an experience where it's going to go good, and it's going to go bad, and it's going to go good, and it's going to go bad. And it's going to do that a trillion times over and over again until you realize that that's all that it does. And that maybe the best thing to do with this dream would be to awaken from it and go home. And if people are interested in doing that, then what A Course in Miracles does is it offers them a way to save time. The miracle in A Course in Miracles is the certain kind of forgiveness that I'm talking about. And the Course says that the miracle can substitute for learning that may have taken thousands of years. So obviously it's talking about saving countless incarnations in your overall spiritual path, because it is a fast way, not the only way, but I think it's fair to say that it does suggest that it's a fast way of undoing the ego, because it cuts to the chase. It's saying, look, there's always a choice to be made, and the choice is, are you an immortal, changeless being? And by the way, you know, I certainly have no problem with Buddhism, but I, you know, completely disagree with the concept that, you know, that something has to be changing in order to be godlike. Actually, according to A Course in Miracles, this world has nothing to do with God, and God has nothing to do with it. And that's part of the feature of awakening from it, to realizing that there is a greater reality, that there is a reality that is just beyond the veil, where, and it's where we really belong. You know, one of the, you know, fundamental tenets of the Course is that this world that you appear to live in is not home to you. And somewhere in your mind, you know that this is true. There is the memory of your true home. There is the memory of your reality, and it's buried there in your mind. And it's kind of like been covered over by the ego. And as you undo the ego, it's a process. I mean, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. It's kind of like a caterpillar becoming a butterfly. You know, a caterpillar doesn't become a butterfly overnight. You know, it goes through a cocoon process. It goes through a metamorphosis to a higher life form that is less restricted and more free. And that's exactly what we're doing on a spiritual path. We are kind of like going through a metamorphosis, and the time will come when all of us will awaken to a higher life form. Except this life form has no form. It's completely abstract. It has no borders or limits. And it's something that you can actually experience, as I said, while you appear to be here. And once you experience that, it is so different than this world, and so much more real, that you just know that it has to be the truth. And part of what we're doing while we appear to be in this world is that we're making it real through the power of our belief. And what A Course in Miracles does is it takes that belief back from the illusion and puts that belief where it belongs, which is in God and His kingdom, which is why the Course says, be vigilant only for God and His kingdom. And what this leads to is an ability, especially in difficult situations, to be fearless. Because now you're saying, and this is what the Course says about this kind of forgiveness, it says, it denies the ability of anything not of God to affect you. So what you're saying is that the world cannot affect my peace of mind. It cannot disturb me or take away the calmness that I feel, because I know that what I really am is something that is immortal. It's invulnerable. It's something that can't be touched by anything in this world.
Right.
When the Course starts off in its introduction by saying nothing real can be threatened, you know, that's what it's talking about. It's talking about your actual reality as spirit, which is unalterable and constant and something that can't be threatened by anything in this world. Then it says nothing unreal exists. Well, that would be anything else, you know, anything that isn't this immortal oneness with God. And it says, herein lies the peace of God, because what it's saying is that in every situation, you can make a choice. Rather than being this individual that can be, you know, snuffed out and die, what you are is something that can never die, never be affected by this world, something that can be strong and peaceful regardless of what has happened. And, you know, even up to and including the fact that if you could completely undo the ego, then it would be possible for you to feel any physical pain. Because, as the Course puts it, the guiltless mind cannot suffer, which is why, you know, the whole idea of Jesus suffering and sacrificing himself, you know, for our sins was just probably the biggest myth in history. Jesus did not suffer on the cross. There's a great section, you know, in the Course called The Message of the Crucifixion. And it's almost the opposite of the way that the world interpreted it, because, you know, people couldn't imagine going through that without suffering, so they made up this whole big story about it. But what Jesus was saying with the crucifixion was that what he really was could not be hurt, that what he really was could not be killed, that he could not die, because the body had become absolutely meaningless to his reality, to the point...
Well, see, you know, I know that's the viewpoint of the Course of Miracles, but I also see there's validity in the fact that it can be both ands. You know, they say that he was fully God and fully man, that therefore there's this mystery of the eternal entering into this transitory and becoming one. And that's where I'm going with this. That's the fascination I have with it, because otherwise it smacks of escapism. I got to escape from this bad world to this place of beauty and wholeness and perfection. Whereas perhaps, you know, this world of beauty and wholeness perfection interpenetrates the world of time and change. I don't have to be fooled by it, but I can allow spirit to express in the fragility of ourselves, and that excites me. You know, I agree totally with what the Course of Miracles say, and I think it is an amazing handbook to free ourselves from illusion. But I don't want to escape from, you know, anything. I just want to embrace it, I think, is where I'm coming from.
Sure. And I think the point of view of A Course in Miracles would be that this world is worth escaping from, and that this is not the happy world.
And that's where we part company, I guess.
Well, I think the Course would say that this is not the happy world, and nobody in their right mind would come here. So, you know, we have an honest disagreement about that.
That sounds Gnostic.
I would say, no, it's not escapist, because it's not asking you to give up your life. It's saying, no, this is more about being what the Course would call above the battleground. So you still live your life. You know, you still do the things that you want to do, and you're not being asked to sacrifice anything. All that you're being asked to do is to look at it differently, you know, to look at it with the Holy Spirit instead of the ego.
Right, and I think we can agree on that one. You know, that's that. I think a lot of it may be just semantics, and but folks, we got to end the show. Unfortunately, we've already reached the end. But get hold of this book if you haven't read it, and there's more books now in the series. Fascinating! It'll wake you up to a whole new way of being and thinking, getting beyond that illusion that we're talking about, where we make up stories about the universe and who we are and our worthiness. And the power of the Course of Miracles, of course, is this forgiveness of expansion beyond the seeming limits that we have. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Gary. Next week, John Phillips joins me. He's going to talk about Egyptian spirituality and the secrets of the adepts and how that knowledge dovetails with the mystic understanding that Gary's talking about and with unity. So I want to thank Gary Renard. for being on my show today. Thank you, Gary.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And, you know, keep up the good work. And, you know, I think you're doing a great job. And thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And I hope that people will, you know, check out my work. They can always go to GaryRenard.com. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, check that out, GaryRenard.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org. Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
Remember when you entered first grade? Did you find it hard to believe you'd ever be able to learn and do all that was expected of you? Do you remember how, through your own consistent effort and the support of your parents and teachers, you did learn the basics and went on to master more complex skills? Life is a process similar to the one we experience in school. As we move through life and attempt to expand our awareness of who we are and what life is all about, we encounter new problems, such as the schoolroom of daily living. We can approach each situation with a positive attitude, take one step at a time, and know it's only a matter of persistence before we arrive at a solution. Repeated efforts will accomplish any undertaking. This law of life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
If I were brave, I'd walk. Where fools and dreamers dare to tread and never lose faith.
How is life working for you? Would it be okay with you if life got easier, simpler, yet more meaningful and vibrant? Join certified life coach Carla McClellan Tuesday afternoons for Vibrant Living. Each week, Coach Carla and her guests will share strategies and solutions designed to make your life more vibrant. Is there something in your life you'd like help with? A dream you'd like to achieve? A relationship you'd like to improve? Call into the show toll-free for Coaching with Carla. That's Vibrant Living, Life Coaching with Carla. Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Central on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What if we're all meant to do what we secretly dream?
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.